Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. Today, I'm super excited to have Kelly with us today, and this isn't going to be our normal conversation, which is what I'm actually quite excited about. So, Kelly, why don't you introduce yourself?
All right. As you mentioned, my name is Kelly Meyer. My wife and I run Project Find Your Fire, which is a business centered on personal growth and development and unbecoming who we became and rebecoming who we should have become. I am a board certified international transformational leadership coach, speaker, and author. I've been coaching one-on-one group coaching, facilitating workshops and speaking for almost 30 years now, which ages me quite a bit. I am the author of a number of different publications. We developed a game called the Spark Game, an interactive game based on our core values of growth, relationships, and wellness. And that really is, in a nutshell, how I got to who I am.
Well, welcome. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. So we are going to start this conversation off with your definition of survival mode.
My definition of survival mode is when people start going into autonomous mode, meaning that they are responding or reacting strictly by instinct and by what our natural patterns are. In other words, to take this like to a more simplified level, many people live in survival mode, and they don't have to be because of trauma influence. They don't have to be depressant or anxiety or anything like that. Like, people who believe that they're living a normal day-to-day life are living in survival mode, and it looks like this. We experience an emotion. That emotion creates a thought, and every thought that we have leads to a behavior. Each behavior gives us specific results. Those results create an experience for us, and that experience spits out a behavior, or spits out an emotion, and then we go to bed and we wake up with the same emotion that we went to sleep with, and we live the same day, day after day after day. It's automatic. It's like when you drive to work and you don't even remember the drive. We've all done that, but that's the basis of survival mode. It's just our body, our mind, our nervous system on autonomous instinct and just going through the motions just to get through the day, just to survive this, just to get to the end, just so I can finally see the light, just so I can finally do this, just so I can finally do that. Survival mode, as opposed to thriving, which is taking yourself out of those different patterns. When you start to notice different things, when you start to experience different things and have different emotions, that's where life becomes fulfilled.
I loved what you said there, and I think it's very important for the audience to understand the emotion, feeling that creates thought, that leads to action, that then creates another emotional feeling that we then store, right? I think it's also very interesting to state here that 95% of our thoughts are recycled from yesterday. So, under that premise alone, unless we are challenging our thought process, we essentially are in survival mode, right? Because we are living recycled emotions and feelings that we don't challenge. And we, like you said, we go into the next day with those same thoughts and feelings. What, and obviously, this podcast has been focused on the traumas that put people into survival mode. But let's remove trauma for the second. What have you experienced? What stimuli have you seen that could trigger someone who may have been taking full ownership of their lives and thriving, but they end up in survival mode because of?
Okay, we have to talk a little bit about perceptions here because perceiving things is bringing things in through our senses, our sight, smell, taste, hearing, all of that is perceived, and each person will perceive something differently. So our senses are perceived. What happens then is that when we experience something in our past, we tie a meaning to that. And it has a specific emotion. And it doesn't have to be even trauma related. When we are sensing something, bringing in something through our senses that reminds us of that emotion, of that moment, we will immediately be taken back to that moment. Now, research shows that almost 90% of all of our triggers are positive. But we don't recognize those. We only recognize the negative triggers. And here's a positive trigger that we've all experienced. Let's say we're listening to an oldies radio station, and that song comes on, and it immediately takes us back to 1984. We're 16 years old. We're on the cruise strip in our car. It's a summer night. The windows are rolled down. We can smell the air. The friends are in the car. The beer is in the trunk. And we think, man, we had a good time back then. Man, we had some fun. And we feel in that moment, we feel younger and more energized, right? That's a positive trigger. That's a positive experience. Unfortunately, we don't remember a lot of those. We let those pass through our lives. But there's a moment in our past that isn't so positive, and we attach that emotion to that moment. And then when we see something, hear something, and maybe it's the sound of somebody crying or an argument happening or a door slamming, it immediately takes us back to that moment. And we begin to live that emotion just as we were there in that moment. That traumatic moment then is going to become part of our future at some point. We as humans have to give meaning to things. That's how we process what happens in our life. That's completely natural. But when we give the meaning to something in our past, that's when that past is going to show up. Whatever it is in our past, whatever the meaning is, that's what's showing up in our future. Just like the oldies radio station. That's going to show up in my future at some point. I'm going to get in my Jeep and drive somewhere this evening. And I listen to the oldies radio station. And there's going to be a song that comes on that's going to make me feel youthful and energized just for a little bit. I know that's going to happen. So I know that's going to be part of my future. The moment in the past is just a moment on your timeline. We can't change that. That's always going to be a moment on your timeline, whatever it is, good, positive, neutral, whatever. The emotion that you give it and the meaning that you give it is going to dictate what your future looks like. So if you give it a negative meaning, if you say, and justifiably so, let me say this, is that giving the meaning, the emotion to that moment is so justified to say, I was hurt. Man, I was a victim. I was taken advantage of. I didn't deserve to live. I didn't deserve to all of that stuff that happened to me. I can't do that anymore. This is what my life is about. That's justified in that moment. But you have to understand that emotion now is going to become part of your future at some point. We can always go back. We can't change the event. That'll always be there. But we can change the meaning that we give to it. If we can look back at an event, we can assign a different meaning. For instance, we can say, maybe I am stronger than I thought that I was. Maybe I do have more resources than I thought. Maybe now I can help somebody else who's experiencing that same thing because I've been through it and I've made it through and I went from survival into thriving and now I can teach them to do the same thing. If you can give that meaning to an event, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. That's what you're going to take into the future and you can experience the same trigger. But when that emotion comes on, now that's a beautiful future that you're looking at as opposed to living with trauma. I don't
I
know.
love what you said. I love what you said here because it is often in the narratives that we tell ourselves what, with the stories that we attach to the experiences that we have, then become our story. And it's really interesting because I recognize, after years and years of abuse and trauma, I had attached a narrative to my experience. And it wasn't until someone challenged that narrative that I actually saw different. Because we as humans, we tend to catastrophize, right? Like the worst case scenario gets assigned to an experience that we go through. And then because we're holding on to this story that we've attached to it, to the emotion that we have, experienced as a result of that, we often get stuck. We get sucked into this cycle of experiencing things that seem quite daunting that may not necessarily align with that. So this boils down to our level of choice.
Absolutely. Because just as you described that, not only does it become our story and our narrative and what we become about, but it becomes our identity. That's what we identify with, that we are that person. And the truth is, we aren't that person. We are a completely different person, not because we've gone through anything, just for the fact that humans evolve. Each day, we are a different person than we were the day before. So, in realizing that, the identity that you've assigned to yourself through your story, through that narrative that you keep reliving and rehashing in your own mind, that catastrophic thought process, as you call it, it's absolutely true. And that becomes what we identify with. Now, there's a phenomenon that I like to call the toxic relationship syndrome. And here's what this is. It's when somebody lives with an emotion for so long, they become literally married to that emotion. I mean, I'm sure that you can attest to this, is that you become that. That's part of your story. That's who I am. Sometimes for people, if they live within that emotion, that hurt, that pain, that anger, that all of this stuff that boils from that event, if they live with that long enough, they become so attached to it, they become married to it, so much so that it becomes scary to think about living without it. I have had people through trauma, through depression, through anxiety, actually work harder to stay in that hurt because getting out of it is a scary place. They've never experienced that before, especially if the trauma was when they were young, right? They've lived their teens, their adult life with this emotion. And what does it feel like to live without it? I don't know, but I don't know if I want to do that because that's just scary. And I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet. You are ready to go there, and that's One of the things I always tell people is that, we think of this personal growth as this, beautiful butterflies and unicorns and sparkles and all of this beautiful stuff and rainbows. It's not like that at all. It's ugly and it's hard, and we're wading through this swamp of sludge to try to shake it off of us and re-become who we should have become in the first place. And I always tell people that I know it's going to be hard, but I'm going to hold your hand and I'm going to walk through this with you. Now, you're going to do the work. I'm not doing your work for you, but you are not on this journey by yourself. And I think that's important for people to understand too, who are trying to get out of this survival mode and get into thriving and are in the midst of the stream right now. Don't turn around because the stream is hard. Keep going because there are people who are walking with you. You don't see them all the time, but know that you are not alone in this journey.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you mentioned how we, excuse me, we attach that identity. Our identity shifts as a result of the emotions that we essentially got addicted to, right? And I can relate to that. I remember being in periods of endless toxic relationships, right? Years of it. One was 8 years, the next was 4, the next was 12, whatever. And I remember there was a time in between where I took some time for myself, but I met someone who, from I couldn't identify it then, but I can now. It was a healthy relationship. It was slow moving. It was healthy. And I was bored. Like, what's happening here? It doesn't feel right. I now can understand that I had spent so many years living that fight and flight response. I had gotten addicted to that. I didn't understand peace. I craved it. But when I had it, it was like, oh, this is not right. But what happens, it's a subconscious reaction, right? Our brain keeps us safe. And according to our brain, what is safe is what we're used to. So if we're used to chaos, if we're used to toxicity, if we are used to abuse, if we are used to being in fight and flight and autonomous, right? Our brain seeks that. And anything outside of that is almost labeled as danger. Like, wait a minute, this isn't it. And I say you can liken it to a dog with a collar, like the, what do they call this? Like those wireless fences, right? Like the dog can roam in the yard. But as soon as it steps over that barrier that it cannot see, it's like, wait a minute. It's shocked. It has this response. That's exactly what our brain does to us when we are moving away from what we deem is normal. So it's not always as easy as making a new decision. It's literally fighting what your brain deems as safe. Which is why healing and reinvention and reprogramming is hard work because you're rewriting the narratives that have become so embedded.
Cells that wire fire together, wire together. We've all heard that before. And it comes for full circle now because earlier you mentioned that 95% of our thoughts are the same thoughts that we had yesterday. And then when you take into account that we have about, what is the number, 30,000 thoughts per day, that's a lot that is going on. But yes, you are exactly correct. Our nervous system is wired to suck back into what is familiar. It's not going into what is good or what is comfortable, but what is familiar. And that's why, I equate the emotional part of it. I call it the toxic relationship syndrome, just like the toxic relationships that people go through. Like, why don't you leave this guy? Well, because I love him and this is my life and this is what I know, right? How many times have we heard that story, that narrative? And so it works kind of the same way, but yes. Getting out of that and the reprogramming is hard and constant. And lots of times people think that, well, if I just read this book, if I go to this workshop, if I do this thing, then I can start to heal. Like, that's just the tip of the iceberg because you have to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it to create you have to rewire your entire nervous system. And there are times it's just going to suck, but you have to just keep going and know that it's good. When you finally found that good relationship and it was boring, right? Because that wasn't normal for you. That wasn't familiar. It was beautiful, but it wasn't what your nervous system wanted. It wasn't what it was used to. And as a retired professor of music, I used to equate, the changes in music style to the same sort of ideology is that our nervous system can only handle the same thing so long before it needs a change somehow. And that's why I think that there are changes through, all of the world that we experience is because that we want what is familiar, but at the same time, there are times when we need to experience something different, as uncomfortable as that is. For instance, somebody who likes certainty, they like things to go a certain way all the time. But if they get too much of that, they're going to screw something up on purpose just because they need a break from the certainty, and then they'll go back to the certainty. People who are uncertain will, go on all of these different adventures, all of these adventures, but they need a break. They need to come home and not be on an adventure. And then they can go out on the adventure again. The same is true for us as humans. We go through all of these emotions, emotion, 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 but we need a break from that. And this is where this crazy eight kind of thing comes in, where you feel hurt, vindicated, all of these different emotions attached to your trauma, but then you can't feel that anymore. So the typical response then is to be angry. So now all of a sudden you're angry for a little bit. You're just angry at everybody and you're just hollering and swearing and carrying on, but then you get tired of that. And then you have to go back to being hurt and used and abused and all of this stuff. But you can't do that for very long because then you got to go angry again. So this is like this cyclical sort of thing that our nervous system goes through is that we need the change, but we don't necessarily always choose the right thing. We choose, for instance, anger is the one I used because anger gives us the same sort of emotional discomfort or dis-ease that our hurt did. And so we can use those two emotions, but we have to go back and forth between them because we can only hang on to one for so long. I hope that made sense. That's kind of a strange concept to take in.
No, it made sense to me. So I'm following along. And it's very interesting that you say it, the anger gives us the same almost reaction as upset and hurt, right? Which is why most of us mask our pain with
Yes.
anger.
Yes.
So that's very interesting. So let's talk about what it takes to exit survival mode.
Okay. Time and a true desire to do so. Now, lots of times I ask the question, what is more beneficial? Increasing your positive thoughts or decreasing your negative thoughts? It's an interesting question. And what I've discovered is, and what the research shows, is that it is more beneficial emotionally to decrease your negative thoughts instead of increasing your positive thoughts. So think of it like this. We have somebody who is going to the workshops, reading the books, watching the videos, doing all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. I'm all the positivity. I've got all the The manifestation posters, I'm looking at mine all over my wall, right? I've done all the manifestation posters. I've done all of the stuff that my coaches told me to do. I'm seeing all these different people, all the positive stuff, blah, 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 blah. I'm on top of the world. But at the same time, while they're doing that, they still are scared. They still are hurtful. They still feel vindicated. They still feel abused. They still feel of that. All of that is still in their life. Even though they continue to drive towards positivity, which is good, don't get me wrong. But unless you eliminate what is negative, you can't truly experience what is positive because they will always offset. I have ridden in cars with people at different events. And they're all positivity, they're all doing this and all of this. You get them in traffic in Atlanta, Georgia, and they become a completely different person. If you could eliminate that part of you, the positive part of you can begin to then gain traction. Right now, it has nothing to get a foothold on. So, eliminating the negative thoughts in your life. I spoke with a client yesterday who is struggling with a couple of different things, and it's his relationship. It's all about his relationship and his business, and his relationship is business, his relationship is business, his relationship is business. I said, "Are you doing your gratitudes?" "Yes, I'm doing the gratitudes. My business, my relationship, blah, 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 blah." Like, time out, man. We have got to eliminate that part of you before we can get to the positive side of you. Our bodies, our nervous system doesn't know the difference between from what we really want from what we say. So in other words, like another person was talking to me about, "I can't do this, and I'm trying everything that I can to do this. I'm doing this and this for this, but at the same time, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm doing this, but I'm doing this. So I'm doing all the right things, but I still can't. I'm still not successful in doing this, but I'm doing this." And here's an example of, and this is something that we all do, but they're spending more time talking about not doing it as they are doing it. So what I like to do with people is to try to set them up into an emotion of what it's going to feel like when they do get across the stream. Because right now it's hard to feel. So I try to take them into a life so that they can experience that. And it takes time because the first few times we do this, your brain is going to want to keep wanting to go back. It's kind of like meditation. If you meditate, the first few times you meditate, you sit down and you get into this meditative state and everything feels great. But within 5 minutes, you're thinking about the emails that you didn't send, the phone calls you have to make, the dishes that need to be done. I've got laundry to do. You've lost that. You have to keep bringing your brain back. And Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza, equates that phenomenon with riding his horse. He says that when I get on my stallion, every once in a while, it wants to go to wherever he wants to go. And I just have to keep nudging him back onto the path. And then he'll want to veer off the path again, and I just have to keep nudging him back on. And the same is true for us. When we start on this journey, when we sense ourselves starting to veer off, just nudge yourself back on. You're not failing if you veer back to who you used to be. Not at all. That's actually a success because now you've recognized when you've gone back. And if you can do that, man, that is half the journey because now every time you start to veer off, your brain starts to go back, your body starts to go back. You can say, "No, come back to me. Come back to me because we're doing something different now and you have to trust me a little bit." So it's a process and it's about creating this new emotion. It's getting new connections going on in our brain. Right? Building the new story while you're doing that, creating this new person, re-becoming who you were.
I agree with all of that. I have said that I believe that exiting survival mode is three phases. First is awareness, self-awareness. Second is reprogramming. And then third is reinvention, right? Because you have to become someone different. And sometimes that, I think that often can be the hang up because they want to remain the same, but change the thought process. In changing your thought process, you change your identity. And it's owning that that becomes the freedom instead of, because oftentimes we hear about positivity, right? Like, and I know you have experienced that toxic positivity where you just want to shake somebody. So when you made that point about it's either increasing your positive thoughts or reducing the negative thoughts, some people probably thought, wait a minute, that's the same thing. And it's not.
No.
Right? And oftentimes we see in this space where people are like, I'm just going to stay in the positive. I'm just going to be, everything's positive. And that then becomes this toxic response. And I mean, who says positivity is toxic? It can be toxic. It creates a toxic response because you are not dealing with the situation. You are just assigning an emotion, almost erasing the experience.
Yeah. And I have actually gotten in trouble with my wife, who is also a coach. And so I feel bad for our kids. They grew up around all of this stuff, you know, as we're writing books and developing the game and all that stuff. And sometimes they're like, Dad, I don't need your coaching right now. So I have to remember that sometimes I just have to be a parent. But I got in trouble with my wife one time because people would say to me, How are you doing? And my answer is always, I'm outstanding. I'm doing outstanding. I'm fabulous. This is a great day. And we'll get home, and in private, she'll say, Why do you tell people you're outstanding? I know you're not. I know you're angry because the bolt broke on that thing you were working on. And I know that you're struggling in the garage. I know that you cut yourself. You're not outstanding. Stop telling people you're outstanding. And I thought about that. She caught me off guard. And I thought, you know what? That's true. That's true. She's got a point. But I also know that I'm in control. And if I can control it, I can change it. So if I have the power to change it, I'm outstanding. That makes me outstanding. I'm feeling good that I have the power to change it. Now, sometimes I don't want to change it. Sometimes I just want to be angry for a moment at the bolt that broke in my garage. But a lot of people don't understand that they have that power, that if you can control it, you could change it. And ownership starts at the beginning of that. You have to own where you're at in your life right now because it is 100% on you. We cannot change the things that people did to us in our past. But it's just a moment on your timeline. How we respond to that, that's on us. Okay. And it's okay to hurt for a while. It's okay to go through those emotions for a while. You have to process it and give some sort of meaning to that. But you don't have to hold that meaning. You don't have to keep that story throughout your life. You can change that, but you have to own it first. That, okay, I own that moment and I own where I'm at right now. And if I can own it, I can control it. And if I can control it, I can change it.
We have so much power. Now,
Yes.
Kelly, this conversation has been re really enlightening, and I actually do like the way that you've broken things down. So, how can the audience learn more about what you do and connect with you?
The easiest way is through projectfindyourfire.com. From our website, you will have access to all of our social media, our different Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, LinkedIn. I actually just started on LinkedIn, so I'm not sure that that link is on there. I'll make sure it's on there. But through our website, you can contact us, get in touch with us, and just look around and see what's what.
Okay. So if you could leave the audience with one key takeaway, Kelly, what would it be?
That's always an interesting question, and my answer is probably different every day. There's a story. When I was young, maybe 14, I wasn't even in high school yet, and I began spending a lot of time probably in a place where I shouldn't have been. I was skipping school at the pool hall almost every day. And I walked in one day, and as I walked in, there was an old man who got up from the bar and he started walking towards me as I was walking back towards the tables. And when he got to me, he stopped dead in front of me and he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm just this little punk." And I said, "Well, I'm Kelly." And he looked at me for what seemed like forever. And then he said this to me. He said, "No, you're not. And the sooner you figure that out, the better off you'll be." And he walked out the door. Now, like I said, I'm just a little punk. And I thought, what a weirdo. A drunk old man hassling some little kid in a bar on like a Tuesday morning or whatever day it was. But you know what happened is that shortly after that, I went through that teenage phase, that was the hard phase, the discovery phase. And when we were trying to figure out who we are and what we represent and where we fit into this world, the old man's words came back to me. The sooner you figure it out, the better off you'll be. And so in that moment, as a young punk, I took a stand. This is what I represent, and this is who I'm going to be. And that's who I became. And my friends were still trying to figure it out. And we go through life, trying to figure out the same questions. We have to reinvent ourselves constantly. That's the human condition. But the sooner you figure it out, the better off you'll be, because now you can move forward with your life. Are you going to get it right every time? No, of course not. I've made a lot of mistakes. But at least I took a stand that this is what I'm going to represent, and this is who I'm going to be, and that's what I can move forward with. And I can alter as I move, but at least I'm moving. So I think maybe that's the takeaway for today.
Okay. You guys have so much control of who you are and who you want to be, and it's about making a choice and be willing to evolve with that choice. Evolution is required. So thank you so much for your time today, Callie. Audience, thank you again for catching another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built just to survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. I will see you next week.